Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Friday, January 25th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. Sitka School District officials say they've taken steps to prevent violence, but also have plans to respond in case something happens. During a work session Wednesday night on the subject of school safety, they also said it'd be a good idea to have an outside audit on how the district's five school buildings can be even safer. KCAW's Ed Ronco has more.
After December's mass shooting at a school in Newtown, Connecticut, National Rifle Association head Wayne LaPierre said, "The only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with a gun." He advocated for armed guards in school buildings, and although he didn't explicitly call for it, part of the national conversation turned to the idea of arming teachers. "Bad idea," says Sitka Schools Superintendent Steve Bradshaw.
"We are not going to solve the problem by putting armed teachers in the classroom, I don't believe. I think we're just going to create more problems."
Bradshaw says he's a gun owner and was a hunter, but he also says it's time for the nation to have a conversation about limiting assault rifles and large magazines.
A college shooting yesterday, a 15-year-old shooting his mom and dad and three siblings yesterday. I don't know what it's going to take for us as a nation to wake up.
But on Wednesday night, in a conference room at Sitka's school district office, the national conversation quickly gave way to a local one. Principals from all five of Sitka's buildings discussed how they prepare for emergencies in each of their buildings. One of the most visible ways is by holding lockdown drills. Window shades are drawn. Classrooms are locked. Students are told to keep out of sight. At Baranoff Elementary, which houses kindergarten and first grades, faculty and staff practice how to lock down the building and keep students hidden. But they also don't want to scare the very young children who attend school there, and so they don't do it while students are in the building. But that could change. Principal Michelle Beach says her staff and the building's parent advisory committee are talking about trying a drill with the children.
"We had at least one parent who started out feeling pretty strongly that she didn't want her child to be involved in any of those drills. But the more we talked about it, and we would never use words such as, you know, we're practicing in case a shooter comes in the building. We would, of course, never say anything like that. So we were trying to think of ways that we can portray that to children that doesn't just scare them but still allows us to practice."
Ben White is the new principal of Blatchley Middle School. The security situation at Blatchley has been challenged by ongoing construction on the building. Having construction workers in and out of the various doors means others can come and go, too.
"There was a very nice lady walking through the building with her groceries and her dog the other day, taking the shortcut from the grocery store. So right now, just as a point in time, we're not very secure because of the construction that's going on."
White says a drill at Blatchley went well, but also that some things need to change. When the lockdown was called, some students were in the hallway and locked out of classrooms. But White says those students knew what to do.
"We had kids in closets, and I mean, they responded very well to it as far as doing what they should do. We found some glitches, you know, just again, we had some doors that locked but don't latch."
Phil Burdick is co-principal of Pacific High School. He said his building, which is still under construction, was designed with an open floor plan, which on one level makes it what he called a safety nightmare.
"On another level, it's potentially the safest building in the school because we're small enough that we have the luxury to build relationships with not just our kids, but also with every single parent and lots of brothers and sisters. That is our first line of defense."
Burdick says conversations about school safety have happened before in Sitka, but that as budgets shrank, those discussions went away. He said it's time to renew that resource.
"It's not a grant, it's time. It's a decision by the adults of this community to make the safety, both mental and physical and emotional, of our kids our number one priority. And that isn't just on the schools, it's also on the parents, and it's also on our mental health agencies, and it's a huge resource."
District officials agreed that a lot of progress comes from talking with kids and listening to them. The conversation did not exclusively highlight problems. In fact, most of it dealt with solutions. Some of the big positives? The Sitka police have an officer who regularly visits the school buildings and knows the students and staff. Police and fire officials have plans for responding to schools in a variety of situations. And they also talked about how to deal with fires, bomb scares, earthquakes, and tsunami evacuations. School Board President Lon Garrison said he was interested in the idea of hiring an outside expert to conduct a security assessment of the various buildings. And members of the board, as well as Sitka's fire and police chiefs, agreed that when it comes to school safety, there are always ways to improve. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Ed Ronco.
It's no secret that energy is getting more expensive. That's especially true in big commercial and public buildings, and you end up paying those bills either as a customer paying higher prices for products or through state appropriations. Estimates put the state's utility bill for public buildings and schools at about $642 million a year. Loan programs are available, but the language of energy efficiency can be daunting. That's where the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, or REAP, comes in. The private nonprofit agency is based in Anchorage. It's working statewide to educate communities about energy efficiency and renewable energy policies. Shayna Kilcoyne and Chris Rose both work for REAP.
And so instead of talking about gallons and BTUs and kilowatt hours, we can say, well, in Sitka, we estimate that over $50 million is leaving your community every year in order to bring in these fuels.
Think about that. Even if you were to be able to be 10% more efficient, which is totally doable, that's $5 million that stays in the community, circulates in the community probably two or three, four times before it leaves.
REAP is also sharing success stories in hopes of inspiring other communities. The group has a goal to make Alaska 15% more energy efficient by the year 2020. Right now, REAP is launching a pilot program in Cake, Craig, and Sitka. The group is developing community-specific profiles to estimate how much money is being spent in each place. They look at how much it costs to import liquid fuel for heat, electricity, and transportation. Organizers hope to replicate this methodology statewide. They estimate that the state is spending $5 billion on energy. Rose says people are already conserving, but that being efficient is different and maybe even more important.
Conservation requires behavioral change, and we're not always, as humans, that great at doing that. It's like the difference between remembering to turn off the light or putting a motion sensor in your room so it does it for you. So one is efficiency and one is conservation.
Some large establishments are already making their buildings more efficient. Mount Edgecombe High School just retrofitted its gym. It now has strings of lights that dim if no one walks under them. State Department of Labor Commissioner Diane Blummer was in Ketchikan this week for the Alaska Workforce Investment Board meeting. She took some time Wednesday to talk to the Ketchikan Chamber of Commerce about workforce development and the services that her department offers. KRBD's Layla Carey was there and has this report.
I like to think that we're the Department of Opportunity.
Diane Blummer clearly loves putting people to work, and that's a good trait for a commissioner of labor. The former Southeast Alaska resident has been on the job since last spring when Governor Sean Parnell appointed her to replace the retiring Click Bishop. She's worked for the state for more than 20 years in various positions before her current job. Blummer says that even she, a career state employee, was surprised by how many services are offered by her department.
There's a lot of opportunity available for youth, for dislocated workers, people who have lost their job and need to be retrained, through vocational education, people who are injured or cannot do their job anymore, and just people who want to upgrade their career. So there's a lot of opportunity that's available, and I'm not certain that people really know what is available.
Blummer has focused on outreach to let people know about those opportunities. Part of that is working with industry leaders to find out what job skills are needed. Through that, the department can focus its training and apprenticeship programs. One example is mining job training, which the department offers in partnership with the University of Alaska Southeast and mining companies.
The DOL forecast indicated that the state will add 500 jobs in mining and supporting activities by 2020. So we really need to be focused on that. And you and Ketchikan know that because of all the activity going on Prince of Wales Island. So it's going to be key to all of us to try to develop the workforce so that we can hire locally.
The mining program has an approximately 98% job placement success rate. Bloomer says she hopes to purchase a portable underground mine simulator to take the training program on the road. That would allow people to participate even if they can't afford to travel to Juneau. Partnerships are key to many programs Bloomer's working on. One new program could tap into a new source of needed labor, prisoners. Bloomer explains that the federal government likely will discontinue a visa program that allows foreign nationals to come here to work. Many of those people worked in the fish processing industry.
We started getting letters in the governor's office that were saying, we won't be able to process. We won't have enough people. We won't have the manpower. And we were talking about a couple thousand jobs. And they're not high-paying jobs. But I thought, I know where there's 6,000 people who could go to work today.
A pilot project for the state's first work release program likely will take place this summer on the Kenai Peninsula. Bloomer says it will put about 20 minimum offenders to work in the first year.
What we're trying to do is reduce the recidivism rate by allowing them the opportunity to pay their bills while they're still incarcerated, get a little bit of gate money, so when they get out, they don't have $1.50 and they're dumped in the car's parking lot, and then they become a repeat offender.
Through various training and apprenticeship programs, Bloomer estimates that the Department of Labor invested about $26 million last year in workforce development for Alaska. She encourages business and industry leaders and people looking for jobs to check out everything the department offers. In addition to online information, there are 21 job service centers in the state, from Barrow to Ketchikan. In Ketchikan, I'm Layla Carey.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here's a look at Sitka's own weather. Today, rain showers with highs around 45, southeast wind 15 to 25 miles per hour, decreasing to 10 to 20 miles per hour in the afternoon. And tonight, numerous rain showers and patchy fog late. KCAW, Sitka.